What is happening, gang? We have got a jam-packed show for you today on the Inside Football Podcast with Bill Polian. This is truly one that I selfishly have been waiting for a long time. We obviously loved making the AFC show last week. This week, we dive into the NFC. And so just to remind you guys, in this episode, we look at the NFC after the first six games of the season, because in Bill's assessment, that's really when you can start to get an analytics-based view of how teams are performing and begin to forecast that out to see who might be the real contenders and who some of the pretenders are as we kind of look at the NFC for the rest of the season. This is truly an awesome show. We get into a lot of interesting things, from Bill's take on the Bucs kind of separating from the rest of the conference, what it's like to see Tom Brady play in a system or with guys that are very familiar to Bill and Bruce Arians and Tom Moore. This is truly a fun one. I think you're going to be surprised by some of Bill's assessment and which one of you fans in playoff cities or in teams that look like they could be playoff teams who should be white knuckling it the rest of the way. This is the Inside Football Podcast with Bill Polian, and this is a look at the NFC after 6 weeks. My lamp is lit. How about you guys?
The lamp is lit. The needle's jumping within the best part of the territory.
Hey, look at that. Well, we were going to have to wait on Rick, but we are no longer waiting, and you guys have to wait no more. The overwhelming response to last week's show was tremendous, and we cannot thank you enough. So this week, we are going to delve into the dangerous waters of the NFC and into the dangerous waters probably of the NFC East and even into the dangerous waters of the Washington football team. This is going to be truly a fun one today, guys, and again, we cannot thank you guys enough for all the awesome feedback on the AFC episode. I think you're really going to enjoy this. We had a lot of fun doing the research and putting it together. And much like last week, we're going to kind of look at these statistics after 6 weeks, because as Bill taught us on last week's episode, that's really the time when you can kind of tell a team is putting it together and really give it a good evaluation. So without any further ado, Rick, why don't you narrow in the focus and get us into this today?
All right there, Johnny Danger. So, as we said, in this episode, we're going NFC. We're going to go team by team with both offense and defense and analyze their performance against the categories that are the keys to winning. So this is not fantasy stuff. This is not what you hear on the pregame shows. We'll give you also the minimums you have to hit on both sides of the ball to be a winner. And then we'll see how each team and their key players are faring so far. Bill, take it away. Where should we start?
Well, let's start with the benchmarks that are the indices of winning. On offense, you need to score 23 points or more. In the passing game, you need to have 350 yards or more average per game. In the running game, you need to have 100 or more rushing yards per game. Total offense should be 450 yards. You need to be plus in the turnover margin. And your quarterback rating should be 100 or better. If you hit all of those benchmarks, as we'll see, you'll have a heck of a record. On defense, I don't want to go too deeply into the defensive statistics because they get a little esoteric, and it's at six games, it's kind of hard to draw a definitive conclusion. But yards per pass attempt, you want that to be seven or above, and your third down percentage, you would want to be in the 40% or better range. And then, of course, you want your points per game ratio to be positive. In other words, if you're scoring 28.8 points a game, you want to be averaging 28.7 or below. And if you have a big deficit, in your points per game, that's usually an indication of everybody should pack their bags because they're not going anywhere come January. So, any questions on that, Rick or Scott?
Let me just say this: with averages, you're sort of rounding it out. You're balancing everything off. What about teams, that are really good 1 week and really bad next week? So the averages might come out where you wanted to, but individual games could be not what you wanted. Is there anything, any way we can separate out those teams versus the teams that are sort of consistently hovering either above all or just around where you want to be on both sides of the ball?
No, and we shouldn't, because as we'll see when we get to week 12, where everybody's played 11 games, over time, the numbers do pan out. And over 16 games, they really pan out. So there's no outliers there. If you're inconsistent, the numbers are going to show it. Now, that's why we waited until everybody played six, so that you take out the occasional outlier and you get what they're really like.
So average really is the story. Especially as the season progresses.
Average gives you the correct story. Yeah. It doesn't tell you why.
Right.
And for that you have to do a deeper dive. But if fans are looking at their team and saying, man, we're not doing too well, but do we have a chance down the road? Well, we can sort of answer that by looking at these numbers.
Bill, in terms of aggregate number, how much does, and this is probably a completely dumb question, but this is a number from a fan perspective I will always look at, not as an average, but an aggregate number. How much stock, if at all, do you put into the average point differential? Because I always thought, for me, from a fan perspective, that was a pretty good bellwether.
Oh yeah, quite a bit. As a matter of fact, we'll see it in the first team we cover here. Mm-hmm. I might as well jump right into the Dallas Cowboys, and we'll see a picture that's stark and very revealing.
A tale of two teams.
so they belong at the bottom. But if we look at the numbers, prior to Dak being hurt, they were averaging 28.8 points a game. They were averaging 359 passing yards a game, 105 yards rushing a game, for a total of 464. Their quarterback rating was 99.6. So we round that up to 100. That's good enough. And now comes the bad news.
Yeah.
Turnovers minus 12.
Woof!
Whoop is right. Unheard of. Point differential. Their defense is giving up 36.3 points per game. That's a differential of minus 12.5. So you got minus 12 in the turnover ratio, minus 12.5 in point differential. This team, the fact that they were 2-4 is a miracle. It's a miracle. They should have been 0-6 based on these defensive numbers. And then when you look at their personnel, they had Dak, he's hurt. Cooper, with Dak out is really not a factor. Ty Smith is hurt. They on defense they have Alden Smith and Lawrence, but that means they've got three difference makers in the lineup. Once Dak was gone, three difference makers in the lineup. That's not enough to do anything. So, as someone said on television this morning, get prepared for the draft, because it's going to be a long season. Now, interestingly enough, they were number one in the league before Dak got hurt. They were number one last year in the league in virtually every offensive category. And the problem for the last 4 years has been the defense. And it continues to be the defense.
Yeah.
And the fact that they can take some solace from not being blown out by an Eagle team that was, was the JV, is that any solace? I mean, no, the answer is no. It's just
no. That's not.
This is rough, man.
No, that yeah. is. This is rough. That's an easy answer. But hey, Bill, two Dallas things that I feel like we have to touch on. One, let's get the potentially more complicated one out of the way first. So with Dak, I mean, obviously, if you see the difference of how the offense has performed without him, you would obviously think, given the devastating injury, given that he was playing on the tag, that the contractual issue was somewhat complicated. But now, having seen how bad they are on offense without him, you wonder if he comes back healthy, do you think in some perverse way this might help his contract situation?
Well, I'm going to let the cat out of the bag. We're going to do a trade show next week. Not a trade show where we show our wares, but where we talk about trades in the National Football League.
You promised you weren't going to tell, Bill.
I know, but this
I'm
was
done.
Too good a
show's yeah, over.
Scott teed me up. This was too good a.
Yeah.
I mean,
you got to swing at it.
Yeah, I mean, when you get one right down the middle, you got to swing it.
Yeah, you got to swing. All right, go ahead.
The bottom line is that the question can be answered any number of ways. The first is the way you phrased it. Yes, of course, his value is obvious for the people in the media and the talking heads who said, "Oh, Dak isn't that valuable, and it's paying him too much money." Yeah, how do you like it now?
Yeah,
right. Yeah. I mean, I think in some strange way, he's going to get more money as a result of sort of the recency of not being there. I mean, as long as everything comes back injury-wise, okay.
Well, as our friend Lee Corso says, not so yeah. fast, my friend.
Yes.
Because if this downward trend continues, they may be in the rookie quarterback business, in which case yeah. Dak would be absolutely in the driver's seat because he'll be a free agent unless they tag
yeah.
him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's an true. Interesting conundrum that they face in the offseason.
But so let's say they do tag him and then the minimum comp is the 2 1s. In some weird way for Dak, that's a great deal. You know, versus say like what Seattle gave up for like a Jamal Adams at a safety, who yes is a difference maker on defense, but you know, if Dak's healthy, of course you trade 2 1s for Dak, wouldn't you?
Of course you would, yeah, in a heartbeat, right? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now he's gonna. the only caveat there is that you're gonna want him on a long term deal, so you're probably unwilling to give up 2 1s unless you're absolutely forced to at the point of a gun. Meaning that there are other people in the market for him because you're going to have to pay him a king's ransom. So that usually would lower the draft choice compensation. But it's entirely dependent on the marketplace.
So let me just do two follow-ups to the first of Scott's two questions. And the first thing I need to say is Lee Corso remains one of my all-time favorite people. And I can tell you, and Bill knows this, he's exactly the same guy in real life as you see on the air, right, Bill?
I mean, that's true. That's absolutely true.
But the second thing is, in this perceived value, in my mind, Scott, the media and the public, this has proven. But from the people, Bill, in my conversation with you, in my conversations with others, I mean, I felt like most football people were already aware of how valuable Dak was. It wasn't demonstrated clearly, you know, now, especially without Andy Dalton even, but, you know, that Dak was no question mark out there in the minds of football people, as far as I could tell.
That's absolutely correct. People knew what Dak was. And no question about it. And there's no argument about it now. It's been unfortunately for Dak, it's been clearly delineated.
So let me ask you this. Bill, you and I both have always thought, you know, a lot of Jason Garrett. And, you know, he's got to have players to even be an offense coordinator here. Okay, so the rumblings came out pretty early about Mike McCarthy. And I'm going to throw Mike Nolan into the question. Is the sample size now big enough, especially in light of all the injuries that we've talked about, and especially on the defensive side of the ball? Is it big enough to evaluate those guys? Was hiring Mike McCarthy a mistake? Should they have a different DC?
No, not big enough sample size yet. Let's see how they handle the rest of the season.
Should Mike Nolan go back to wearing a suit and tie?
Well, the way coaches dress these days, I wouldn't be. I wouldn't be opposed to seeing somebody in a suit and tie.
He pulled it off pretty well. I mean,
especially the younger ones dressed as though they are car mechanics.
Yeah.
No, I mean, Mike Nolan pulled off the suit and tie in San Francisco pretty well.
And there have actually been coaches known to cut off the sleeves of their sweats, believe it or not. So anyway, go ahead.
True enough. Okay, let's go to Atlanta because this is a puzzle, but one that's easily soluble. On offense, they are averaging 27 points a game, more than enough to win. They're averaging 291.2 passing yards per game. That's not as good as you'd like, but it's not terrible. They're averaging 112 yards rushing a game. Their total is 403, which is below average, but they're +3 in the turnover margin and 97.8 for Matt Ryan in the quarterback rating. Now that's not as good as you'd want. And so it's not been a great year for him. However, they're giving up 30.7 points a game on defense. So they got -2.7 in point differential. And on defense, they're giving up 8.2 yards per pass attempt. That's off the wall. You don't want that. That's a bad, bad number. And on third down, where you want to be 35% or, 37%, they're at 41.4. So those two numbers tell you, plus a little downturn by Matt Ryan, tells you why they are now 2-5. But the chief culprit there is the defense, without question. And it's not just blowing leads in the third and fourth quarter. It's playing bad defense throughout, because that's what those numbers indicate.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any number you can look at like that, Bill, where you can look at a team and say, hey, this is a team that's potentially going to have an issue with folding down the stretch? Because, I mean, if you look at the Dallas game, and the Detroit game is probably even more egregious, but you look at the collapse in those two games, those are two of the greatest collapses you've seen maybe in the last 4 or 5 years in the league. I mean, the Detroit one was absolutely insane.
Yeah, well, look, the numbers tell you that defensive excellence is not here. It's unsustainable. So, unless they can pick that up, unless they can get under, in the 37-36% range on third down, and they can get that yards per pass attempt down under 7, this is a team that's headed right down there. You can't score enough to overcome a 30.7. Per game average. I mean, that's not an anomaly at all. That's
yeah. let me ask a question that I've wanted to ask you for a long time. I don't think we've ever discussed this. It's the sort of the Matt Ryan conundrum. I mean, here's a guy who in three specific years had quarterback ratings of 126.3, 136.3, and 105.1. But he's also had quarterback ratings of 67.7, 63.3, 92, 85. But I've never quite seen anybody who's so up and down. Bill, is there something about the team over those years or something about Mount Ryan over the years that explains this both yo-yoing and this inconsistency?
Yeah, it's the offensive line. When the offensive line protects him, then they're in pretty good shape. He'll have good numbers. When the offensive line doesn't protect him, the numbers go down dramatically. You can track it. I didn't do it for the purposes of this discussion because I'd already done it. You simply track it, track the sack and hurry numbers, and that tells you the tale. He's not inconsistent because he doesn't prepare well. He's not inconsistent because he doesn't throw well from week to week.
Right, or doesn't know how to read his progressions or something like
right.
that. It's just so
right.
he's a guy who can't buy sufficient time either to correct for a poor offensive line. If he's got that pressure, that hurry, he's that really knocks him out of the park, sort of. So in the baseball sense, sort of.
And really, no one can correct for that. That's a misnomer.
As
we'll see, no one can correct for poor protection. You might, from time to time, be able to escape and make something happen, but not over time. Poor protection is going to get you.
And he's had in terms of quarterbacks in the NFC, he's had the fourth most pressures of any quarterback in the conference. Mm-hmm. He's been under siege this season.
Yeah, that's what the numbers tell you. That's right.
And the other tricky thing with Atlanta, Bill, is that they're sort of stuck. Atlanta's one of those teams just future casting out. And we had a couple fans sort of ask a few things about this week. Atlanta's one of those teams with the cap going down next year. This is kind of the roster they're going to have going into next season, short of pulling a Jacksonville. How incumbent is it on them in this period to figure out, okay, is Raheem Morris the guy and can they get it right? Because this is probably what they're rolling into 2021 with.
Well, I'm not so sure that's true. First of all, the cap is going down. But the question is going to be how much, A, and B, what will the market be? If you presume the market is going to be up while the cap is down, that hasn't happened. Mm-hmm. So maybe the market thins out. I was talking to a baseball friend today who said, we don't have any money to go out and get anybody at today's prices. I said, yeah, that's right. But today's prices may not be tomorrow's prices mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. next week's prices. And he mm-hmm. said, well, that shows why you're a general manager. He said, my GM said the very same thing. And mm-hmm. and it's absolutely, it's true. It's absolutely
yeah.
true.
Yeah.
So let's see what the market is.
Right. Because in terms of absolute dollars in a depressed market, X dollars under the cap will buy you more than in a seller's market.
Yeah, my only thinking with them is if the cap's at, like, let's just say 180, 179, with Matt Ryan's contract, he's quasi-untradeable, quasi-uncuttable, Julio, similar kind of deal. The core elements, if you were going to try to make this a reboot and rebuild, you're probably a year away from being able to think through that kind of thing, I think was what I was driving at.
It's possible. Matt could also take a cut. The NBA players are going to take a cut, right?
Yeah.
That could happen.
Yeah.
And the cap could be flat too, by the way, which is more likely.
Both sides are certainly working together to not make it as onerous as it really would be, absent an adjusted situation.
That's right. First of all, the naysayers, the doomsayers, I should say, who started wailing about the cap is going to be, down $35 million. That's never going to happen. People understand. These are professionals on both sides. They understand that you smooth it out over time. And the television riches are out there. It's just a matter of getting back to whatever normal is going to be in this country. So this won't be – you won't have as much flexibility as you otherwise would have had, because you're correct, Scott, that people have contracts built in that were based on the cap constantly going up. But I don't think it's doomsday either. And then what will the market be? Is the market going to be great for Dak? I'll bet it will be. For the average quarterback, is there going to be a market? I doubt it. Okay, let's move on to another surprising team. And we end up the leaders in the NFC East. The Philadelphia Eagles.
And we use the word leader.
Hey, they're fly, Eagles, fly. I said it out loud.
Advisedly. So some interesting numbers. 22.3 points per game. Not good enough. 226.9 passing yards. Awful. Especially with Carson Wentz. 118.6 rushing yards. That's darn good. Total of 345.5. Not as bad as you might think. Turnovers, minus 5.
Yeah, there you go.
And quarterback rating, 74.3. So, I suspect that if you tuned in Philadelphia Sports Radio, they would be reporting on the fact that they would like to deport Carson Wentz.
Jalen Hurts time.
And the numbers would tell you that he's not having a great year. But, here's the big but. He's playing with the JV. Ertz is hurt. Goddard is hurt. Sanders is hurt. A young man named Fulgham, who no one had heard of 4 weeks ago, is now the leading receiver. So he doesn't have much to play with on the offensive side of the ball, although Boston is doing a nice job running the ball. And when Sanders is 100%, that's a pretty good tandem. You'd like them to have a banger to go along with them, but that's another matter. And but the offensive line is an absolute mess. And I don't mean, you know, poor performance necessarily. Injuries, age, it's just, ugh. It, you know, and there isn't much you can do to fix it. And Carson is pressing. There's no two ways about that. He's pressing. And they need to get him back to the point where you say, Carson, just don't play with your teeth clenched. Your back isn't strong enough to put this whole team on it. Just no player is. Let's just get what's there and let the defense work and let the kicking game work, and we're going to be all right. He's so conscientious and so competitive. He's making mistakes that he's never has made before and probably won't make again. But it's not that he's a terrible quarterback. It's just that he's pressing. Defensively, pretty good. 6.5 yards per pass attempt, 42.1 on third down. And their difference makers, Cox, Graham, Barnett, and Slay, on the defensive side of the ball are largely there and performing well. So this is a team, if they can straighten out the offensive line and get some semblance, well, they need to get Ertz and Goddard back. If they can straighten out the offensive line, that's a big if, get Ertz and Goddard back and get Sanders back, this is a team that, you know, however many wins they have is immaterial, they could be the NFC East champion, and they would be my pick, simply because they're good on defense.
And everybody else is terrible. Hey, Bill, real quick, one thing when you look at, so like this injury issue in Philadelphia, this is not a new thing. You know, this has been going on year after year after year. It was kind of like what was going on with the Redskins now football team, you know, with under the Jay Gruden administration, where we sort of seem to every year lead the league in injuries. what can you attribute something like that to when you see a team that just has this number of injuries year after year? Is it how they're practicing? Is it a training issue? How worrisome would that be for you as a GM if you're seeing this number of injuries year after year?
Well, if what you're alleging is true, I'd be, A, worried about it, and B, I would be diving into it with both arms and both feet and with three analytics guys by my side to try and get to the bottom of it. I don't know if it's true or not. There is a perception problem we have in professional football about injuries, where if stars get injured and they miss a significant amount of time, there is, quote, an injury epidemic, close quote, when in reality, when you look at the stats at the end of the year, that's not true. For example, there was a a baloney story out there about 3 weeks ago that injuries were killing the game. We've never had injuries like we've had this year. It's unheard of. You know, the talking heads on Monday and Tuesday morning. So I got the statistics for people on injured reserve, and this year, over the first 4 weeks, they measure them in 4 week increments. There were fewer people by a lot on injured reserve in the first 4 weeks this year than there were last year. So the talking heads and the nervous Nellies just simply look at the number of, quote, marketable, known name players out there who are down. And when there's enough of them, it's an injury epidemic, when in fact it really is not. The competition committee also gets these numbers and takes a deep dive into them every year. And they get the numbers in February. And it really is a driving force upon, you know, for rule changes, and including how you practice and how long you can practice and so on and so forth. But to make a judgment now is just foolish because we don't know what the numbers are.
Right. And let me add two things to that. One is that with the IR numbers down, that's even more significant given the fact that the IR rules are different this year and that you can bring everybody back. So
yeah, they're much more lenient. They should be up, actually.
It's much easier, you know, to just put guys on IR, you know, and bring them back. The second thing is, and Bill taught me this statistic many years ago, and this just shows you what a tough and brutal game football is, that for every game you play, including preseason, you're going to lose one person, one player, to a major injury, which is a traditional IR 6 week plus injury every game. So if you're playing 20 games over the course of the season between preseason and the regular season, you're going to lose, there are 20 people that are going to get that injury. So, I mean, that, and that's year in, year out, good teams, bad teams, everybody. So, and when you look at it, it really does, at least the times I did, it really doesn't vary much off that. Of course, there will be aberrational teams where some teams have worse years than others. But when you look at it, the overall and overall scheme of things, that number holds up.
Yeah, for sure. Now, let's go to a team that is a little-known team, but is a pretty darn good dark horse, the Arizona Cardinals. They're 5-2. They're averaging 27.7 points a game. 241.5 passing, which is not what you want. But they make it up by averaging 161 rushing. Much of that is Kyler Murray. Much of that 161 is Kyler Murray. So they're at 402, which is subpar, but not terrible. They're even on turnovers, and Murray is 91.3 QBR. So Murray is actually underperforming as a quarterback pretty significantly. Mm-hmm. Now, this is not to say he doesn't make spectacular plays. He does. But we're talking football here. We're talking winning, not stories. So he's underperforming as a quarterback throwing the ball, but he's two things as a quarterback. Number one, as a runner in space, he's electric. So that's why that 161 is there. And number two, when he's outside the pocket, he's as good as Russell Wilson as a pure football thrower. He's really good. He's accurate. He gets the ball down the field. He can do all those things outside the pocket. Inside the pocket, not so good because he's 5'10". So there's a drawback there. But here's why they're the dark horse. 18.7 points a game given up. Plus 9 point differential. Yards per pass attempt, the defense, 6.1. Third down, 36.5. Difference makers, Hopkins, Kirk, Murray running the ball. Drake may be back this year. We don't know. He's hurt. He was a damn good runner before he was hurt. Jones out for the season. Imagine what the defense would be if he were healthy. And Buda Baker. Mm-hmm. So this is a team that doesn't have great defensive personnel, but they're playing really well. The quarterback does miraculous things with his feet. So until defenses catch up to him, he'll be a weapon there. And so they got a chance. They got a chance. They're going to be interesting. Treat them as a very viable team and a very relevant team.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Back into their division, which is an interesting division, the Rams. At the six-game mark, they were 4-2. 25.3 points per game. Good enough. 253 passing yards. Whoops. You know.
A little low.
Hello. 135.2 rushing. 388.2 total yardage. That's not good enough. Minus one in turnovers, so that's in a lot. You know, you can change that. 101.4 passer rating, not bad. Here's the difference. Yards per pass attempt, 5.9. Third down, 35.6. Defensive difference makers, Donald, Ramsey, Floyd, and a great job done by the Coach Staley, the new defensive coordinator. So you're talking about a team that's kind of known for its offense with Cooper Kupp and Akers, who's a darn good back, and Goff, who's really making their money on defense, which is a good sign. Defense travels, and it's a good sign.
Hey, Bill, how with Goff, how worried should we be about Goff? Because, I mean, obviously the numbers are a little bothersome. Just anecdotally from watching them play a lot, it seems to me like when he's in the pocket and they're not getting chunk plays off of kind of that boot action on the stretch play, he seems to be regressing a little bit.
I wouldn't say he's regressing, but he's a quarterback. The 101.4 tells you a lot. What it tells you is he's not an elite quarterback. And what it also tells you is that he needs a supporting cast and a system around him that fits, which he has. So he's doing the best he can with what he has. Is he Big Ben? Mm-mm. No. Is he even Wentz when Wentz has people around him to protect him? No. You know, is he Russell? Not by a long shot. But is he good enough to win? Yes.
So Is this year, though, just part of sort of this overall slide? I mean, right in 2017, but they're 11-5, and 2018, they're 13-3. Then they dropped to 9-7 last year, and they're doing what they're doing this year. I mean, that's certainly not the progression you want to see when Bill Polian comes and builds out the Colts or builds out the Bills, and it, you know, it gets better and better and better and better. To what do you attribute that, and is that a legitimate barometer that the team is just going in the wrong direction?
Well, I don't think they're going in the wrong direction by any means. And secondly, I think they corrected what was wrong last year, which was the defense. And that's proving to be the case thus far. You know, Gurley is pretty much at the end of his career. He's a part-time player now, a good part-time player, but a part-time player. They were relying on him last year, and the defense wasn't nearly as good as it is now. And so, you know, give them credit. I don't think they're on the downturn at all. Are they a wrecking ball? No, but they're a good team. They're legit.
Is that another one to keep our eye on?
Yeah, absolutely. I would kill. Yes. Yeah, sure. Yes.
Hey, this is going to be a stupid X's and O's question, but just, and we don't want to dive too much into this. But with them, I mean, that boot action on the stretch seems like the hardest thing in the league to defend at some level on defense. Why is that so hard for those defensive ends to keep contained? Is it just they're fooling you so much with the motion off of it? It just seems like every time they do it, whether it's the jet sweep action off of it, it just seems like they're going to get a 20-yard chunk play every time they run it.
Well, keep in mind that the boot action is triggered by the zone blocking scheme. So when all the blockers go to the right, they're taking all the defenders with them. They can't possibly do anything but that. And now when the quarterback, especially if it's the outside zone, where they really threaten the far outside of the defense, and then he pulls it and comes back, and you're bringing either the tight end or the slot receiver across opposite all of that action, you've got the secondary flowing, you got the linebackers flowing, and now the quarterback's booting out the other way, and you're running either a deep cross or a deep post against all of that flow, it's wide open. I'm smiling because I can see Peyton Manning and Marvin Harrison going throwing touchdown pass after touchdown pass off that action. That was our that was our money play, boot off the outside stretch play. It's like an option play. It's hard to defend, man. It's just hard. There's too much eye candy taking you away from the ultimate direction the quarterback's going to go in, and it affects all three levels. I don't know if I explain myself properly there, but that's the answer.
No, you definitely did.
Yeah, no.
Okay, let's turn to the to a very disappointing team, the Minnesota Vikings, and let's look at the numbers. They're averaging 25.3 points per game, so that's good enough. 235 passing yards, not good enough. 139.2 rushing, more than good enough. -7 turnovers, ooh, and 88.2 passer rating. So the question is this the quarterback or is it something else? Well, let's look at the people that are surround the quarterback. Thielen, Rudolph, Cook. Pretty good triplets there.
Pretty good.
Hunter.
Yeah.
Barr, Smith on defense. And in their yards per pass attempt on defense is 8.2. That's reflective of not rushing the passer well, which they don't do. Third down is 33.8, which is really good. but they're getting too many chunk plays. The 8.2 is telling you they're getting too many chunk. They're not a lot of third downs, is the bottom line. So who's at fault here? If they have to put the blame on somebody, it's clearly the quarterback. Is he being protected? Fair to Midland. He's just not having a good year. Period. End of story. Now, you know, I've said time and time again on Sirius Radio, on this podcast, it's not what a player gets paid that tells you what his worth is. It tells you what the market is at any given time. And Cousins was paid what the market was at the time that he was up. Good for him. God bless him. -7 is not surprising for him. And that's there's your difference. Simple as that. Now, how do you fix that? You run the ball more like they did this past week. But in the end, you can't get all the way there doing that in the National Football League. I'm going to run through the 49ers.
Hey, real quickly. Quick, I just gotta admit, from a Washington football team perspective, I just enjoyed the last 5 minutes of this podcast more than about anything we've done in quite some time.
And he's a great guy. And
yes.
Oh, let's not ruin it. Let's not ruin it.
Come on.
Buzz killed Bill on this, but you know, the numbers are what they are. You can't deny them.
Yeah.
49ers.
Well, I've enjoyed it.
Hey, listen. Hey, Bill, look, timing's everything. Same thing about another guy who's a great guy, not a great quarterback, Joe Flacco. Did it exactly the right time, you know, for his era, got paid, you know, as much as he possibly could, and, you know, was raising his family. So, you know, good for him.
Yeah. 49ers, 24.7 points per game. 21.7 given up, plus 3 there. Really good numbers. Passing down a little bit, running up 127.8, minus 1 on a turnover, 101.2 quarterback rating. Goff is 101.4, Jimmy G is 101.2. That's what they are. Remember that 100 is the dividing line between playoff contenders and non-playoff contenders. That's what they are. They're functional quarterbacks. They've got so many people hurt.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's really going to be hard. They're 4-4 right now. It's going to be really hard for them to do anything more than 500. It's a hell of a coaching job. But this is what tells you that they're probably going to lose their defensive coordinator to a head job. Yards per pass attempt, 6.4. Third down, 37.3. Hello. You want a good coach who can coach no matter who's out there? Pick up the phone and call Robert Saleh. And he's going to interview quite well, by the way. All right, let's turn to a team that everybody's picking to go to the Super Bowl, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Here we go.
29.5 points a game, 20.3 given up, plus 9.2. Wee! Passing yards, 249. Rushing yards, 109.2. 358 total, which is just, you know, good enough. Plus 4 in the turnover margin. Thank you very much. And TB12 with a 97.8 QBR. That, I must tell you, is a bit of an anomaly. And it's really because he's not had any preseason and any time with his receivers. I expect that by the time we hit week 12, he's going to be over 100. And now with AB, he may be off the charts.
Yeah.
The question is, are there enough footballs for all the guys out there who can catch and run for touchdowns?
We're going to find out.
Now, let's look at the defense. Look at the defense.
Okay.
Yards per pass attempt, 6.1. Third down, 38.9. This may be the only team that hosts the Super Bowl in its home stadium in modern times.
Yeah.
Because I don't see any flaws. Look at the talent. Brady.
I mean, it's unbelievable.
Gronk, AB, Evans, Godwin, Dominican Sue having his best year. Alavante David, Shaq Barrett, Winfield, the rookie, playing like a veteran. By the way, the call last night was the right call. We can get into that later if we have time. We'll have Mike Pereira on later in the year. We can argue that one. But
yeah.
This is a complete team. You want to look at a future head coach? Hello, Todd Bowles. How does his job with the Jets look now? And look at the job he's doing with this team. With, by the way, a rebuilt, completely rebuilt young secondary.
Yeah. Hey, Bill, speaking of coaches, there's two here, you know, with whom you've had, you know, intimate relationship over many, many years with Tom Moore and Bruce Arians. Why don't you talk about them a bit?
Well, Tom Moore, Bruce Arians, Clyde Christensen, all of which were with us in Indianapolis. Tom Moore is an offensive assistant now. He was our coordinator in Indianapolis, brilliant offensive mind. Bruce is a phenomenal coach, great person, really a hard-nosed coach, demanding, but great to be around. Players love him. The perfect guy to work with Brady. And Jason Light, their GM, has done a good job putting people together. Todd Bowles, I mentioned. Clyde Christensen is a great quarterback coach. He's had the pleasure of working with Manning and Brady. I mean, there's a lot to be said for that.
Hey,
Bill, to that end, how weird is it for you to watch these guys?
Yeah. Are you going to do this, Scott?
Yeah, I'll do it. So how weird is it? You can do the back half of it. Rick and I had a lengthy talk about this last night. But, I mean, it is odd that you've never – I mean, I can't think of another example in sports where, you know, arguably Manning versus Brady in terms of team sport, individual player, kind of competing against each other. You know, there's been nothing kind of like it in sports in the last probably 20 years. It's sort of the Magic and Bird thing. This is the equivalent of Larry Bird playing for Pat Riley and the Showtime Lakers later down the road. I mean, how weird is it for you seeing your guys, you know, coach this player who was largely your greatest nemesis for, you know, the longest time, for a decade in Indianapolis?
Well, it was more than a decade, probably about 15 years, really. It's all said and done. You just accept it. You know that they're going to help him be better, and you know that. You know, they're going to be a good team. You can count on that. At some point in time, I'd be anxious to sit down over a couple of beers and hear what their comparisons are in terms of just what it was like to work with them.
Yeah.
And I'll bet there are many more similarities than there are differences. But that would be the only thing that would interest me. I think, you know, this is the world of sports these days. Peyton finished in Denver and Tom finished in Tampa Bay. I mean, it's just the way it is.
Yeah, but it's not like Peyton finished with Bill Belichick in Denver. I mean,
there's an irony here, but wait a second. So this brings us to, as you were saying, that's a perfect segue to the second half of the discussion that Scott and I had last night, which is, you know, those guys put together the offense that Peyton Manning played in. I know it's evolved some, but what is, you know, now Tom Brady's playing in that offense virtually. If you go back and forget where he is in his career now, I mean, you know that offense as well as anybody. If you could have Peyton Manning at the helm or Tom Brady at his peak, both of them at their peak at the helm of that offense, who would you pick?
I don't know. I don't know. I've not been around Tom, enough to know how well he would operate it. I mean, either way, you're okay. Doesn't matter. They're the two preeminent quarterbacks of their generation. And this, by the way, is not the same. This is not the same offense we ran in Indianapolis, nor is it the same offense he ran in New England. It's Bruce's offense, adjusted to concepts that Tom feels good with.
Yeah, okay. That's certainly fair. Well, Scott, we sort of got the answers to our question.
Kind of. I mean, because it doesn't seem like they're cutting it as loose in terms of the deep ball with Tom there as they did even with Jameis, or what you sort of conceptually saw with Peyton. Or is that
well,
just totally
please God that they're not doing it as much as Jameis did.
Yeah. Right.
How do you like 30 interceptions?
Hey, it was fun.
Oh,
it was fun to watch.
I think you were thinking more of like you'd throw the ball long and your guys would catch it, right, Scott?
Yes. Yeah, it just seemed like the offense was a little more oriented around deep stuff than, you know, I think we've even seen it change a little bit in the last few weeks. Is that it's starting to look more kind of like the stuff you saw Tom run in New England a little bit.
More Brady-ish.
Well, I don't know what you mean by that. It doesn't register with me.
Okay.
And I'd have to look at statistics to see. You know, what they're not throwing is Edelman across the middle because they don't have Edelman. And they don't need to. They're throwing Gronk down the seam. They had one last night. You know, here's a prime example of what makes these guys great. They catch a defender who's man-to-man on Gronk on outside leverage, right? And the minute I saw it, I said, uh-oh, touchdown. So Gronk escapes inside, down the seam, cover two. See you later, alligator. You know, touchdown. So they still throw that.
And you've seen a little of this stuff with Scotty Miller.
A little bit, and that's why he likes Scotty Miller, because Scotty Miller reminds him of Edelman and the other little guys.
Yeah,
but, and Welker.
You know, Bruce's offense, ironically enough, based on your question, is a down-the-field offense. And that's what Evans and Godwin do best, is go down the field. Now, Tom doesn't have the gun that he once had, but that's all timing anyway. So, you know, it's a different offense. It's not the New England offense.
So this is just to our listeners. If you ever wondered whether this was completely unrehearsed, Scott and I talked for an hour and a half last night about a subject, and Bill shoots us right down on everything we raised. So thank you, Bill. We wasted some of your time. I'm sorry.
No, I had
that's
fun.
That's why they call me Buzzkill Bill.
I like it. Hey, we got the Kirk stuff in. That's all I cared about. All right, move us along, Bill. Where are we going next?
Let's go to a team that, if you happen to be a fan of the Pack, you should be white-knuckling it. Offensively, no problem. 32.4 points a game, 257.2 passing yards, 139.4 rushing, outstanding. And that ain't the quarterback running, so that's an outstanding running game. 3.99.6, plus one in turnover margin, 109.7 for the quarterback. That's elite. And the idea that the 139.4 rush is really important because of the weather in Green Bay and the weather in that division. When it gets bad in the playoffs, you got to be able to run the ball. That was a Bill Parcells axiom, and he's 100% right. Here's the problem. Yards per pass attempt, 7.2. Third down, 41.5. And while I don't have the statistic, I think they're 28th in it or 29th in the league in yards rushing, giving up. They simply can't defend the run. And they didn't defend the run last year. And the news media, I understand why they do it. And television, I understand why they do it. Aaron is the show, and Jones is the show. And today, get him another wide receiver. The answer to their prayers is another wide receiver. No, it's not. Stop the run. The defense is unreliable, and it will remain unreliable until they can stop the run. It was unreliable. San Francisco slammed the run right down their face in the NFC Championship game. And I thought that the organization would say, whoa, you know, we can't have this happen. Let's get this straightened out. And they didn't. They didn't. And Minnesota just took it to them yesterday. But that's not, you know, that's not out of the ordinary. They're a very poor team against the run. And as long as they are, they're probably not going very far. Let's talk about the Seattle Seahawks. Another team that you go, woo, are they fun to watch? And I don't know how far they're going to go. Pardon the sound effects, but okay. 38.8 points a game. Thank you very much. 33.8 yards a game. 27.0 plus 6.8, which is anything more than plus 5 is really, really good. 250.4 passing, 115.4 rushing, which they deserve great credit for, because who in God's name knows who's carrying the ball? You don't know from week to week. I think they must pick guys up off the sand lots or something, but they everybody they get goes out there and plays. 395.8, so they're right where you want to be, plus 6 in the turnover margin, 129.8 for Russell.
Whoa.
Playing lights out, and he is an elite quarterback. Look at the guys that they have on offense that can do things. Wilson, Lockett, Metcalf, Carson, when he's healthy, is really a good back. They've lost Irvin, who is really their only legitimate rusher, but they have Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright, and Adams, who they traded and paid a heavy price for, but rightly so, will be back before the season's over. But on defense,
here we go.
Yards per pass attempt, 7.7. Third downs, 50%.
That's crazy.
And giving up 27 points a game. They simply cannot rush the passer, hence the trade for the defensive end from Cincinnati. They're doing everything they can to shore up the defense. Why is it that way? Because of the salary cap. Once they paid Russell and the Legion of Boom got old, they couldn't replace them through free agency. And guys like that are hard to replace through the draft. And they couldn't keep them. So it's a typical salary cap casualty team, a great team that's been decimated on one side of the ball by the salary cap. That's what the salary cap is designed to do. Mm-hmm. And Russell Wilson and a phenomenal offensive group is keeping them afloat. But whether they can go all the way or not, I don't know. The defensive numbers would tell you no.
And that's another ironic one, given that it's Pete Carroll. I mean, that's the defense that's killing him. I mean, I agree with you 100%. It's the way modern football plays out. You build a great team. You can't hold on to a great team. Sometimes you're lucky and you can figure out ways to replace the missing parts. They haven't, but it's not because, you know, the coaches there don't know how to play defense.
No, that's true. I mean, it's just a function of the salary cap, really.
Yeah.
You know, and a great defense that got old. It happens.
You know, which as you say, is doing what it's supposed to do. You know, yeah. Along with parity scheduling and the draft, it's one of the levelers. That's why this yep. league, more than other sports, you know, has so much competitive balance in most years throughout the league. I mean, it's working. It's working.
Right. Right. It is. You're right. Okay, let's turn to the New York Giants. Not much to talk about here. 17.4 on offense, 24.9 on defense, minus 7.5. So that accounts for the record. 184.3 in the passing game, 98.1 in the run game, but Saquon Barkley is gone now. I thought they did a decent job last night running the ball with the Clemson kid. So that's not bad. 282.4, you're not going to win very much doing that. Minus four, you're not going to win very much doing that. And they were worse last night. 73.7, that's real. The quarterback is turning the ball over. They're talent-wise, Barkley is the real thing, but of course he's gone for the year. I think Shepard's pretty good. I think Ingram's pretty good. I think Lawrence and Martinez and Bradbury are guys, and maybe Fackrell are guys you can hang your hat on defense. But this is a team that, as Giant aficionados who are friends of mine point out, has drafted poorly really from about 8 years ago, and they're paying the price for it now.
Yeah.
Plus, it's not Dave Gettleman's fault. They've actually drafted pretty well with Dave. Plus, the quarterback is off the air with his footwork. And that's obvious. It jumps out at you. That's what's causing all the problems in the passing game. He's hopping around in the pocket. The two-point throw last night is a prime example of it. Hopping around, didn't get his feet under him, didn't get the ball out on time. And as a result, the DB makes a great play. He's inconsistent because his footwork is inconsistent. And I would bet that his processing is inconsistent at this point because he's worried about the fact that he has no one to protect him, particularly a tackle. Now, last night, I thought they did a pretty good job. By their standards, a pretty good job. So that may get better. But this quarterback is Daniel Jones is not a bust, but they've got to get him straightened out, and that starts with his footwork and his pocket presence and his processing. So Jason Garrett's a great coach. So I suspect they'll go back to square one and get that straightened out. But that's if you want to know why. Someone on the broadcast said, why is he inconsistent? Just check his feet.
Yeah. So, Bill, earlier in the year, you know, when all that hadn't been quite revealed, I know you talked a lot about, hey, you know, the tackles and that he wasn't getting the time. So as an inexperienced guy, you know, he was reacting to that. You know, I think I agree with you last night. It was a little bit better. Among the things that one can teach somebody once they get to the NFL level, you know, is footwork and how to properly read your progressions, you know, among those that really can be taught and or can be learned from the other point of view, as opposed to accuracy or something like that. That's really really hard to develop. You know, that at that point in one's career.
Yeah, yes, the answer is yes. You can do it through drill, you can do it through experience, you can do it through game experience, and yeah, you can.
So there is hope for Daniel Jones.
But you got to recognize, yes, there is. But you got to recognize that there's a problem.
Yeah.
How much of it is, cuz it seems like, and I could be totally off base here, but you know, being with David Cutcliffe in college, his footwork seemed a little better. It seemed a little bit better maybe last year. How much of it is he's just kind of dealing with the fact he's getting killed on almost every other play? I mean, just...
Yeah, that's it. That's the answer.
I mean, it's just... Because, I mean, my worry with him is it reminds me a little of Patrick Ramsey with the football team where, like, you know, a lot of the pieces are there. And then, you know, you just go through a season where, you know, in that case, in Spurrier's offense, where you literally got your quarterback killed and, you know, you just kind of wrecked him because his footwork just suffered because he's just scared to death he's going to get destroyed on every play.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, that's a fact. It happened to Jim Plunkett in New England many years ago as well. And he got straightened out with the Raiders and went on to a great career. But, you know, they got to repair the damage there. And it's collateral. The quarterback is collateral damage to the protection. And the fact that Saquon Barkley's not there either.
Because how much would you approach the rest of the season in terms of, like, just with Daniel Jones's development? I mean, would you just say, look, our goal here, the season's probably lost at some level in terms of our ability to win the division, but who knows in that division? How much would you just invest in, okay, we're going to get him right, and that means we're probably going to do things to protect him a little more, less aggressive sort of tactics on offense? How much of that would you employ through the rest of the season?
That would be job one. Let's get him straightened out. He's the future. If we're going anywhere, let's get him straightened out. Right. We can't change the people on the front, but we can get him better, and we can do more to protect him. And let's make sure that we get his mechanics and his processing all straightened away so that right. when we begin next year with some new people on the front, we got a guy that isn't damaged goods.
Well, because could you imagine New York at the opening of the draft that the Jets and Giants were 1-2 with Lawrence and Fields on the board? I would not want to be Daniel Jones, I don't think.
You'd have a Duke degree.
You would, yeah.
He does. No,
and, you know, that's sort awesome. Of a fun kind of guy. But
moving right along, the New Orleans Saints, this is another team, beware. 30.8 per game. 30.0 given up, plus 0.08. That's not good territory. 263.4 passing, that's fine. 115 rushing, that's fine. 378 total, pretty good. Turnover margin, plus one. QBR, 102.7. And without, you know, people say, well, Drew's losing it. No, he isn't. He doesn't have Michael Thomas, who's probably the most valuable receiver within the context of their offense in the league. And that would be 10 points higher if he had Michael Thomas at minimum. So whatever is wrong with Michael Thomas, if it doesn't get corrected, that's why I say beware. Because I don't think there's enough in terms of offensive talent. Kamara's Kamara, I grant you that. And Sanders is okay, but I don't think there's enough offensive talent here without Thomas to take them all away. On defense, yards per pass attempt, 6.9, not bad. They've been giving up too many big plays on defense, and they shouldn't. There's talent here. You look at the Jordan, Davenport, Rankins, Davis, Lattimore. I mean, they're people who can make plays on defense. So they got to get that straightened out. That's straightenable. But it's the defense has got to get better, and they got to have Thomas back. You can't have two flaws. Drew might be able to overcome the loss of Thomas, might. But you can't have an unreliable defense and not an offense that's hitting on all cylinders. So beware a little bit of the New Orleans Saints, and we'll see what happens when they play Tampa Bay this week. That'll be interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
The Bears are also a beware team.
That's a white-knuckle team.
21.3 on offense, that's not good enough. 19.3 on defense, that's more than good enough. It's a plus two, but it's largely driven by the defense. 222 in the passing game, not good enough. 90 in the running game, not good enough. 312 total, not good enough. Plus one in the turnover margin, really good. Their quarterback, 80.4, no good. You look at the talent level, Robinson, Patterson, who's an all-purpose guy. And then on defense, Hicks, Mack, Smith, Fuller, Jackson. Kmet's contributing a little bit. You know, he's making a rookie contribution, but he's not a difference maker on offense. So, you know, aside from the quarterback, where do they get the offense from? Denny Orlovsky, who was with us in Indianapolis, made a good point this morning, or yesterday, I guess. He said, go back to Mitch because the offensive line isn't good enough. The receiving core isn't good enough. So let Mitch run around and see if he can make plays with his legs. kind of interesting. Not sure I buy it. When you're bad, you're bad. And running around isn't gonna change.
Isn't gonna fix that.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you, with Mitch in there, the plus one is gonna go up. So you know, I don't know, but we'll see. But this is a team with a great defense that has a hard time getting out of its own way offensively.
Talk to me about Nick Foles. I mean, you know, and I know it's kind of which Nick Foles you get, but, you know, I was going to ask you about the Trubisky question, but now you've kind of dealt with that. But, you know, it almost feels like schizophrenic with him. I mean, you know, sometimes he comes in and he's just unbelievable, you know, and other times he comes in and he's not good. I mean, even with the same team. So is there something about him that, you know, is sometimes so uplifting and sometimes so disappointing?
Well, you're looking at it from a fan or a media standpoint.
I am. This is a fan's question.
In Jacksonville, he had one receiver to throw to, DJ Chark. Here he's got one receiver, Robinson. The little kid, Muncy, now, who's starting to show something, is hurt and probably gone for a long period of time. So, Mooney, I'm sorry. So there's nothing there for him to throw to. He's not very mobile. The offensive line's not very good pass protecting. And that's why. Same is true in Jacksonville. What did he do in Philadelphia when he had an offensive line at its peak? A decent running game and, you know, a lot of good receivers. Mm-hmm. He happened to win the Super Bowl. So, you know, is he a 80.4 passer? No, he's probably a 96 or 97.1 passer. Good enough, but there's not enough around him.
Right. So it's not this thing where it seems like when he's coming off the bench, you know, I know the players, there's nothing to that.
No.
Whether he's starting or not, it's just the same old football stuff that you've been talking about through all
the
whole
cupboard's
show.
Empty.
Yeah, unfortunately, the game is the game. You can't change it. Stories don't change it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the X's and O's. It's the Johnnies and Joes.
Yep, I knew that was a fan. I knew that was a fan one, but I also knew there's a lot of fans that wanted you to hear what you had to say about that. So,
the pantry is empty in Chicago on offense.
It is. It is that.
Yeah, and I think they've lost the key to the pantry door.
Okay, Detroit, this is puzzling to me. And I have to be honest and say, obviously my bias is toward Jim Caldwell because of the fact that I love him and worked with him for all those years. And he took us to a Super Bowl and, you know, the guy's a good coach. And I don't think there was any reason to let him go, but they did. And so what's the result? They're 26.6 on offense, which they should be, because they have Matthew Stafford, they have Galladay, they have Hockenson. Hockenson, by the way, is the best tight end nobody knows. But they're giving up 28.6 on defense, minus two, with Matt Patricia, who's the defensive coordinator from the world champion New England Patriots. 230.4 on offense, 117.4 rushing yards, which is good, better actually than, I mean, that was a point of emphasis, and they hit that benchmark, 347 total plus two in turnovers, 91.4 for Stafford, which is probably not as good as it should be, but. You know, on defense, who they got? Okuda, who looks like he could be okay, and Collins. You know, they brought in people that they knew from New England, but the results are not showing. And so, you know, this is a case where the offense looks like it can do some things, but the defense is not performing at all. 6.9 on yards per pass attempt, and 48.3 on third down. So that's very un-New England-like. Do they have any pass rushers? Not really. And I don't know that you can, you know, you can make up for that difference over time. And that defensive performance is getting you nowhere. But by nowhere, I mean, you know, you're not going to the playoffs with that kind of defensive performance, especially on third down. Your favorite team, Washington. I wish I could tell you that there was light.
Let's do it. Here we go.
There was light at the end of the tunnel. But right now, it looks a little bit dark.
There's 2022. That's what we're aiming for.
Okay. Well, fair enough then.
Yeah, that light at the end of the tunnel may have been an onrushing locomotive.
Yes.
What's a little surprising to me is that they're not doing better defensively, but they are changing systems. And so in many ways, although there's better talent than there is in Dallas, this defensive transition is what Dallas is going through as well. Because if you stop and look at it, who have they got on offense besides McLaurin that causes you to stay awake at night?
Nothing. I mean, Gibson maybe one day, but nothing.
Yeah, Gibson one day, but nothing right now. And Gibson is learning how to play pro football in a new position on top of that. So the there's not much on offense, but you got Sweat, you got Young, you got Allen, you got Fuller, you got Collins, you got Ioannidis, you got Kerrigan. That's pretty good.
And you got Payne. I mean, it's pretty good on defense.
Yeah. And their yards per pass attempt is 7.1. Third down is 42.6. I mean, that's not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is I think they're going through a scheme transition here. And so you'd hope they'd be better. But there's got to be an influx of offensive talent, and they have to decide, you know, who the quarterback is. I suspect that he's not on the roster right now. But we'll see.
Yeah, hey, they can't even decide what their name is, let alone a quarterback.
I wonder where he is. Let's find him. Yeah, it's bizarre to me just looking at it that you would think. I mean, I think part of the challenge also, just in terms of sort of lack of a better cliche, complimentary football, like the fact that the offense can't score, can't sustain drives, you've got a defensive line that's kind of built to rush the passer. It's hard to rush the passer when you're playing from behind every week.
All of that is true. All of that is true. Look, in the National Football League, there's a reason why you got to score 23 points to win. You know, it's, over time, the numbers tell you this is what you got to do. And if you don't have the people who can do it, you're starting out with one hand tied behind your back. And so it just becomes an uphill struggle. And one negative outcome leads to a second negative outcome. Or as a former colleague used to say, mixing metaphors, you know, when the car springs a leak here, it springs a leak someplace else. And before you know it, you're underwater. He meant boat.
Yeah. But hey, it's still pretty good. It still works.
He's talking about one of those cars that has a keel and runs on the water. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, that's exactly what happens. So they've got two things going against them, the defensive scheme change, which takes time to develop, and secondly, the lack of firepower on offense.
I mean, I don't think there's a team in the league who has less firepower on offense than we do. I mean, it's probably us and maybe Jacksonville, and I would think Jacksonville has more than we do.
I'd have to do an analysis, a more in-depth analysis, but I really stopped. You know, other than Gibson and McLaurin, I can't think of any that you know would be I'd be interested in trading for.
So, Bill, I'm not going to put you on the Scott. You think their problems could have anything to do with ownership?
You know, we're turning it around. I mean, I think everything, you know, it stinks from the head down. So, I mean, I think it's one of those things where the thing I take solace in as a football team fan is that we have a more professional operation, I think, in a lot of ways, at least on the football side. I think you can tell Coach Rivera, Coach Del Rio, Scott Turner, they're at least bringing some level of stability. I mean, this is a season, this is a roster that in a lot of ways in years past, we would be 0-7 and talking about, you know, this is one of the worst teams in the history of the league. So, I mean, I think if you look at the lack of talent on offense, I'm sort of pleased with the fact that we've won two games and been competitive in a lot of games. And I think you are seeing glimmers of what the future could hold. It is worrisome to me that they've invested 49er style, you know, five first round picks in their defensive line. And it's not like we're seeing immediate returns. And then you kind of wonder, you know, you see a guy like Javon Kinlaw in San Francisco and you do sort of the head comparable to a Painter and Allen. And you go, as much as I like these guys, I don't think we're quite at John Lynch's level in terms of getting defensive line talent. But we'll
different
see.
Style of players, though. Different scheme. See, Payne was and Ioannidis and Kerrigan were drafted for a different scheme. And the kid in San Francisco was drafted for a specific scheme for which he fits perfectly. These guys they're not square pegs in round holes, but they got to do a little work with the lathe and the saw to make the holes fit properly.
Yeah, I think it's more than just whittling. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the on a totally unrelated topic. Javon Kinlaw is going to be a different dude, I feel like.
Yeah, he's got a chance.
Another thing I'd throw out there, though I obviously, growing up in Baltimore, I grew up hating Washington teams. I'd like to see the Washington football team succeed because I really would want to see Jason Wright succeed.
And it's good for the league.
Very important.
It's good for the league when we have a good team here. So, all right, we beat the horse. I think we got one left. Let's do it.
I think we did everybody, didn't we?
Who's out there?
No, we didn't do Carolina.
Carolina. Bill, how can you forget?
Wait a minute. I thought we were doing this in a very specific order. I thought you were going to do my hometown team second to last. You were going to do your home team last. I thought there was a method to the madness. So let's pretend as if there was the hometown team.
Hey, Bill, yeah. Where do you live, Bill? Oh, there's the hint. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. 230 yards. I'm sorry, 23 points per game. 23.5 given up, minus 0.5, so right on the cusp of mediocrity. 266.7 in the passing yards.
The cusp of mediocrity.
116.8 rushing yards, which is good, and that's without Christian McCaffrey. 383.5 total. Minus one in the turnover, 101.9, which is what Teddy is. It's amazing how the QBR really tells you what the quarterback is.
Yeah.
Defensively, 5.9 yards per pass attempt, outstanding. Third down, 50.6, not so outstanding. And that's a real problem that we'll talk about here in a second. On difference makers, Anderson, Samuel, McCaffrey. On defense, Burns, Shaq Thompson, Brown, and perhaps the rookie safety slash linebacker. So there's not a lot of great talent here. There's not a lot of difference-making talent here. But they are well coached. They stay in games. They do the right things. With talent around them, Teddy can win. They had a situation. It drives me slightly wacky when I read and hear people venture descriptions about players. They had a situation this past week where they had a chance to win the game. at the end of the game, even though Teddy was probably half on Dream Street, he'd taken a hell of a blow during the last drive. And no Christian McCaffrey, of course. And no tight end. They don't have a tight end on the squad, really. That's a factor. And so I forget whether they threw an incompletion to end the game or an interception. It's immaterial. That night on radio and television and the next day in the paper, it's, well, you know, Teddy's good, but he can't win the game by himself. Hello. No one can win the game by himself.
I think it's a team sport. Yeah.
Where does this come from?
Yeah.
The guy did a heck of a job. They don't protect him very well. He got blown up. To his credit, he came back in the game. What they really mean is, and they don't know it, what they really mean is he doesn't have the rocket arm or the late game savvy of Brady. He doesn't have the rocket arm of Russell Wilson, and he doesn't have the ability to run around like Russell Wilson. That's what they really mean. But what they're saying is he can't overwhelm a team with his natural talent. Well, guess what? Everybody knows that. It's not news.
Yeah.
He's a heck of a competitor. He's a tough, tough guy. His teammates love him. He's way better quarterback than Jake Delhomme was, who took the Carolina Panthers to the playoffs. And that's not a knock on Jake. He was a good, solid quarterback. But, you know, to denigrate Teddy Bridgewater because, gee, he can't take over the game and win for us when everybody else is slopping around, you know, somehow, I don't get it.
Well, I got to say one thing. I'm glad we did Carolina just because I am now very often going to turn to the phrase on the cusp of mediocrity. I love that phrase. It kind of reminds me of the quote Jim Harbaugh, when discussing his NFL career, said, late in the career, goes, I'm now in the twilight of a mediocre career. So.
It's pretty good. I mean, Bill, am I wrong? I feel like this is a sneaky good team next year. I mean, they've got so many interesting kind of weapons on offense between, obviously, a supreme weapon in McCaffrey, but Samuel's interesting, Moore's interesting, Robbie's interesting. There's just a lot of different pieces that this could be a really dangerous team if they have a really good offseason going into next year.
Well, they got to get the offensive line straightened out. And that's job one. And then they got to get the secondary straightened out. Now, they did a really good job drafting everybody on defense this year. And as I mentioned, there are five players on defense that are very solid players. So they got to get some help, corner help in the secondary. And probably some safety help, and then straighten out the offensive line, and with McCaffrey back, it's pretty good because Davis is a sound, solid backup. This is a pretty good football team, and then, you know, the question is, where do you finish, and do you want to go all the way with Teddy, or do you want to take a chance on a rookie?
Yeah.
And even though my wife says Matt Rhule didn't pay attention in poli sci classes, he's a pretty good football coach.
He's a darn good football coach. And I would have thought that he paid attention in poli sci, but he was maybe distracted by drawing up plays or things like that.
I think he was distracted by my wife. But
I was going to say, Scott.
Collegiate smoke show at Penn State.
Exactly. I thought that was the compliment you were fishing for. So sorry I didn't get it.
That's what I was shooting for. All right.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so here's my kind of broad stroke takeaway from the NFC, and thank you again so much for doing this week, is that it's a very different story than the AFC in the sense that in the AFC, it felt like you had two or three teams that really separated cream of the crop. Here, you got a lot of teams kind of bunched in that white-knuckle territory. Tampa maybe is the team that has separated from everybody else, at least statistically, but it's a much more muddled picture in the NFC, I think.
That's correct. And the numbers would tell you that the only team that's really separated themselves, where you say, I don't see the numbers telling me that there's a glaring weakness, the only team that's really separated themselves is Tampa Bay.
Right. I mean, it's the only one that we certainly reviewed today that was really good on both sides of the ball. I mean, right? I mean, which is what this has all been about, you know, both of these shows, defense and offense. So, you know, so Bill, what do you think? Is it going to turn out they are as good as they seem they might be, especially with Brady probably getting better and better as he becomes more familiar with the guys? Or is this about as good as they're going to get?
Oh, no. I think they're, you know, first of all, injuries are always the greatest leveler. You can't predict them, and they change everything. Now, they lost Vita Vea, who's a terrific nose tackle, but they went and got the Jets guy, and so that's a great replacement.
McClendon's a nice fit there.
Yeah. Tampa Bay is a two-year window team, probably. You know, that's got to be a rebuild after that. But for goodness sake, they've been the worst franchise in sports history forever. So they'll take 2 years up and then a rebuild.
I'm signing up for that right now. Right now.
So Scott, you like the ironies. You got the quarterback with the greatest winning percentage of all time playing for the franchise that's the worst winning percentage of all time. So
that's correct.
Yeah, makes a difference.
That's some kind of bizarre kismet.
So, you know, can they keep it up? I think so. Yeah, I mean, they got a lot of depth. Fournette is maybe not the entire answer in the running game, but they got so many weapons otherwise that, you know, he's gonna be good enough. So I think they're for real. And I don't see anybody else that tells me necessarily, now that the 49ers are all beaten to a pulp, I don't see anybody else except Seattle, who has, of course, the fatal flaw, and New Orleans, who, of course, has Drew, but a defense that's underperforming, I guess you would say, that can challenge him. And Green Bay, I mean, I don't – as much. First of all, they embarrassed Green Bay from a scheme standpoint in the game in Tampa Bay. Now, you can fix that. You can fix that, and I'm sure they will. But you can't fix that run defense. You can't fix it. And
So maybe it is – maybe it is Tampa at home in the Super Bowl, and maybe there'll be some fans. That's what the NFL said, at least keeping the door open.
That's the rumor. That's the hope. All right. Well, without further ado, I got to say this. I want to thank everybody for the ridiculous amount of audible questions we got this week. A lot of triaging we'll have to do. We're going to be sure to get to everybody's, but it's going to take a minute. I tried to pick two fun ones that are topics we've kind of gotten into, but one was a fun one for me that I'll get to. So without further ado, Rick, we've got an interesting one, and it kind of builds on playing in your home stadium in the Super Bowl. Can you hit Bill up with this one?
I will. So, Bill, we've talked about this, but I don't think we've talked about it much on the show. And let's try to do this in a way that's both specific but also illustrative of sort of the general proposition. Talk about your involvement and the whole process, politically, economically, contracts being signed, you know, all that kind of stuff of creating Lucas Oil Stadium.
Oh God, that would take a whole show.
That's a show. It's a show.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we couldn't even begin to cover it in the time we have left here.
Hey, well, let's do this. Hey, so you get a this fan is going to get a super bonus because not only are we not going to cover it in the Audible, we're going to do a show on it. So let's say that
go.
On the pod, I don't know when it's coming. Maybe once we get into the off season, one of the first shows we'll do is we're going to hit up the topic of stadium construction. We'll go through the process of Lucas Oil, but that'll be a fun one. So that's a first in the Audible. That might be an Audible Hall of Fame question when you get a show out of it.
This is never so. Whoever it is out there, thank you very much for submitting that. And you are the Audible champ so far.
So far. So let's see if somebody can take the mantle from him next week. All right, this is...
All right, Scott, you try yours. You try yours.
Yeah, this is going to be an easier one. I don't think this is a whole show, and I disagree with one of it. But all right. I know Bill has a relationship with Bobby Ross. Coach Ross took my beloved MD Terps to heights we haven't seen since he was our coach. I think Ralph Regan did a pretty nice job. Any in-depth analysis from Bill on Coach Ross would be great.
Oh, wow. I'm so thrilled to do it. First of all, one of the finest human beings you will ever run across. A great husband, a great father, a great military officer, an American patriot, a leader of men, honest, straightforward, as caring a person as I've ever met, as disciplined a person as I've ever met, solid and sound a football coach as I have ever met. When I was fortunate enough to be around him for the first time when we both came to the Kansas City Chiefs together, me in a very minor advanced scouting role, and he is the special teams coach, and then later, I guess he was the offensive backfield coach right off the bat, if I'm not mistaken. He's one of those people that when you watched him coach and you had the good fortune to be around him, you said, this is a head coach without question. You knew immediately. And so when we went to the Buffalo Bills and Marv Levy became the head coach, we were in the market for an offensive coordinator. And so I said to Marv, you know, our relationship was such that, you know, I could be as completely open and honest with him as I could with anyone. I said, you know, at some point in time, you're going to hang it up. Let's bring in Bobby and you know, your successor's on board. You know, and he's the offensive coordinator. And Marv's response was he chuckled a little bit. He said he'll be long gone by the to another head job by the time I hang it up. And I said, well, if that's the case, wonderful.
Not so fast, Bill. Yeah.
So he agreed to come, and we had a security director named Ed Stillwell, who was a security director, is a non, the title doesn't do him justice. I mean, he did a bunch of different things. He's a retired state police detective who had all kinds of contacts everywhere. And as I said, jack of all trades. But he was a true fan. I mean, he loved the Buffalo Bills. He loved his job. He loved working, you know, with everybody in the building. And he was very opinionated. And he really thought he knew football. And so, see, he would say to me, we'd be driving home from a game or sitting around. He'd say, Polian, you know, so-and-so can't play. I said, no, Ed, you don't know what you're talking about. He's going to be good. Give him time. And the player would turn out to be okay, and he would say, I told you so-and-so could play. that was the kind of guy he was. And so I said to him, I got a job for you, and it's kind of a menial job, but you know, it's below your pay grade, but it's really important. We're bringing in a guy who's going to be the offensive coordinator, and he's from the South, and this is kind of new territory for him, and he's phenomenal. And I want you to really roll out the red carpet, you know, make this work and do whatever you got to do to make his family happy and all of that stuff. So he said, okay, who is it? I said, he was a gruff guy too. I said, his name's Bobby Ross. So he said, I've heard of him. So I said, okay, make sure he's heard of you when it's all over and it's a positive right. opinion.
Right. That's the issue.
Off he goes, and he picks Bobby up and brings him into the office, and so Marv, Bobby and I get together, and we take care of whatever we had to do administratively, and then Marv gets with Bobby, and they begin to talk about the offense. Of course, Bobby had been the head coach at Maryland at the time, and that's how we'd gotten a beat on Frank Reich, of course, because Bobby had. I'll tell you that story in a second. Bobby had steered him to me. And the day ends, and Bobby's going to go back to the hotel where we put all the coaches when the families hadn't moved. And I said, if there's anything you need, just holler. He said, no. He said, Stillwell's got me. He's got everything covered. He's going to pick up my laundry. He's doing this. He's doing that. I said, well, okay. That's it. You'll love him. He must be in your corner then. So... No sooner does Bobby leave than 15 minutes later, Stillwell walks in and he says, Polly, I'm going to tell you something. This Bobby Ross is going to be a great one. So the Frank Reich story, I stop at Maryland. Frank's got the job. I think he'd been backing up Stan Gelbaugh. Stan got hurt. Both guys ended up with us. And it was, I got there rather late after practice. And so, you know, went and got the film. And so all of a sudden, Bobby pops in. He said, hey, good to see you. How come you didn't tell me you were here? I said, I didn't want to bother you, you know. No, come on in. So I go in his office and we sit down and we're reminiscing And he says to me, you got to really take a hard look at Frank Reich. He's a pretty special guy. And he gives me a great rundown on Frank Reich. So obviously he was right. We drafted Frank. He's had a great career, obviously. And now is having a great career as a coach. And it was because of Bobby that I really went and took the second look. But when I got back and told Marv about it, I said, you know, I really didn't need the second look. It's just, you know, if Bobby put his imprimatur on him, that's good enough. And Marv said, yeah, you're right. It is good enough. And so, Bobby is just like I am, a disciple of Marv Levy, a person that Marv Levy didn't create Bobby Ross. He created me, but he went a long way toward developing Bobby Ross into the coach he became. So for the Buffalo Bills, the story ended very soon thereafter. Bobby got an offer as the head coach at Georgia Tech, and he came in and talked to Marv and I about it. And we said, Bobby, you got to go. This is a great chance. And of course he won a national championship with Georgia Tech and then took the San Diego Chargers to the Super Bowl. And then, had he not been ill, he went to the Detroit Lions and did a good job there, but got ill. And had he not been ill, it's very likely he would have been the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts.
Mm-hmm.
Because going all the way back to 1978, I guess it was, in Kansas City, when you see people that are stars, you know it. There's just no way around it. You know, you just know. From day one, I knew that Bobby Ross was special, and it's been an honor to work with him and be friends with him for all these years.
Yeah, you know, that's great, and you know, also Frank Reich. What could You know, how could anybody predict, even you, Bill, with what you knew, or Bobby, or anybody, that one guy would lead the greatest comeback in college football history and the greatest comeback in pro football history? I mean, incredible. Yeah, I mean, that's just Ripley's Believe It or Not kind of stuff. I mean,
well, it is. That's absolutely right. You can't predict that, although Frank did it in college, so.
That's what I'm saying. College, and then the pros. I mean, you're right. It's a precursor, but even the chance to do it and do it is amazing.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I have a suggestion. If we've gotten a lot of audibles, maybe we ought to think, including the Lucas Oil Stadium thing, which is, it's going to really take some time to give you an answer that's meaningful. Maybe we ought to do an audible show.
Well, Bill, yet again, jumping the gun. We were thinking in the coming weeks we would do an Ask Bill Anything episode that would be full of audibles. So, again, foreshadowing next week trades. So, guys, why don't you get your questions ready in the next coming weeks? We will do an Ask Bill Anything episode full of audible questions, and we will get Bill's insight into a wide range of topics. And thank you again for taking us through the pride of Richmond today.
Oh, that's true. But as Bill's lawyer, Ask Bill Anything does not mean Ask Bill Anything.
Yes. Well, it doesn't mean we ask the question or read it. It's just, you know.
All right. Okay.
It's the modern term. Rick, we all know your familiarity with Reddit and AMAs. So I'm sure we will do that. Well, guys, thank you again so much for an awesome show today. This has truly been super fun the last 2 weeks getting to run through the AFC and NFC, and we will be sure to do it again right around week 12 and then again headed into the playoffs. A lot of cool content coming up for you guys. Next week, we're going to dive into the world of trades. As always, if you have questions for us, feel free to hit us up on Twitter at IFBillPolian, and we will be sure to hit it in an audible or in this future Ask Bill Anything audible episode. That was a fun one, gang. Let's do it again next week. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, everybody. And if you haven't voted yet, vote. Stay safe.
By the time this is released, you probably can't vote.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Crazy world going on. So, Rick, not understanding the magic of taped production, but fantastic. Vote anyways. Vote coming up in 2021.
Fortunately, I do understand the concept of editing.
Yeah. Oh, no, we're leaving that in there. We're leaving that in there. And that's a show for this week. Thanks, guys.
All right. Bye.
All right. See ya.